How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome to Open Floor. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. You can normally hear me on Sports Illustrated Weekly. Please listen and subscribe. But I am back. I am filling in again for Rohan and Pina and Herring. And I am joined once more by one of my favorite people and basketball writers. You heard him on Friday on the Open Floor. He's back for the Monday double dip from the Ringer. It's Dan Devine.
Gonz, I can't believe you brought me back. I passed. I passed my audition. Extremely kind of you to bring me back. And I'm excited. Listen, as you know, I'm one of the world's foremost gamblers, a real sharp, a tout, whatever you like to call me. So let's go make some money.
Yeah. So we're going to do the over-unders for every NBA team here. But you mentioned, you know, like you're not exactly a gambler. I'm not either. I always find it amusing. So we cover sports professionally. I have for over two decades now. And it's always funny to me when fans or listeners or readers get pissed off because we can't predict the outcomes. And I'm like, listen, man, if I could predict the outcomes of games or anything that could get me more money than I'm making now, do you think I'd be doing this? I'd be on an island somewhere. I'd have a drink with a little umbrella in it. You would never hear from me again.
A dude reached out to me. I forget the guy's name, so forgive me. But on Twitter, I think last playoffs, and because I had written something that was like keys to the series. Mm. And, you know, he's like, oh, that, you know, the thing that you wrote about that team was awesome, but I didn't believe it. So I faded you and I made money. And I was like, well, that's the way to use me, yeah, is to be like, click on the stuff, read it, spend your time on it, but then be like, I disagree, and then go make your money. Yeah, that's completely money. Fine by me.
So this is our very unscientific over under win total podcast. Keep that in mind. It's mostly, you know, helping us review the off season. But I'm sure we'll get all of our predictions right. In the event that we don't, we invite the Open Floor Globe to come back at us and tell us how many we got wrong at the end of the season. But let's start with the top of the NBA, according to the Vegas odds makers, the good people at Caesars Palace. Dan, have you already looked at these numbers? Like, if I asked you,
yes, I mean,
you snuck a peek. I should have told you not to. That was my fault.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I was like, you know, as you said, we were going to do this. And so you said, you know, it's going to be our unscientific look. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I mean, clearly I'm going to apply some science to this. And, but I did take a quick look and then just basically put my hand over my eyes and said like, over, under.
Yeah, okay.
So I did a quick look at that, but also I can pretend I didn't see anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure.
Forget
the jig is up here, buddy. I think the listeners figured it out. All right. At the top of the food chain, according to Vegas, the Boston Celtics, it hurts my heart. 54.5 for the Celtics to win this upcoming season doesn't surprise me. They just went to the NBA Finals. They lost to the Golden State Warriors, but they returned the preponderance of their team. They are young. They are talented. Sadly, they are in Boston. What do you think about Boston Celtics 54.5 over under win total being the top mark in the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it makes sense given that it's a little bit weird when you first look at it because it's like, well, they finished with 51 wins. We're saying they're going to be that much better. They're going to be 4 wins better than they were last year. But then you remember, like, they had all that sort of static at the beginning of the season. They were 18-20 in the in early January. So, like, they were on that hellacious tear, you know, basically once the calendar flipped to 2022. And they were, you know, riding even higher until Robert Williams III got hurt, you know, a few weeks before the end of the season. So the idea being, like, they know how to play under Ime Udoka now. They bring back that core. They're also still in the conversation for Kevin Durant, which I imagine is going to loom large over this sort of, you know, a lot of these numbers. But if they just bring back that same team, they also added Malcolm Brogdon and
Danilo
Gallinari.
Way underrated.
Yeah.
Although he's had injury history, but right. I do really like him a lot, adding on to that team. The depth is so deep.
Yeah, and when people talk about, I mean, the concerns that people raise, like, well, Gallinari's not going to be able to play defense in the playoffs. Like, yeah, but we're not worried about that. We're just worried about a guy who can, you know, come off the bench and give you 15 points, right, or, you know, spot start at the four for a week while somebody else gets some rest. I think the only concern you'd have is just, like, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum played a ton of minutes last season. And so are they going to look to be, and then with Al Horford being up in age and, you know, who's coming, basically coming off a year off last season, and Robert Williams coming off his injuries, will they kind of manage minutes a little bit more and rest guys a little more strategically with the eye of playing deep into June? So if they do that, maybe that depresses the win total a little bit. But if they go kind of balls out with that depth they've got and the roster they've got, 55 does not sound outside the realm of possibility for them at all.
You're going over?
I think I'm going under because of the rest stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that they're going to think about it like, we're playing for June. We're not playing for, you know, a Tuesday night in February in Orlando, which I know is like the sort of the stock joke about a game that doesn't matter. Someday the games will matter again soon in Orlando, I promise, Magic fans. But I don't know if they're Magic. They're right now, you're still just sort of the example. I'm going to go under just because it's a big number and I think they're going to rest. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if they blew it away.
All right, so you're going under. Journalist John has high hopes for the Celtics, would likely take the over. Journalist John isn't here at the moment. It's the Boston Celtics. I'm going under. All right. Next team on the list, the Phoenix Suns, 53.5. They bring back Ayton. Slightly disappointing playoff performance for them, considering that they had made the finals previously. Chris Paul is getting up there, but he has figured out a way to play at an advanced age, and he is still really, really good. Devin Booker, I'm a huge fan of Mikal Bridges, who has been bandied about. His name has popped up in all these different trade rumors. I like their team as is. I'll make this easy. I'll go first over on the Suns.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over on them as well. I think they're, you know, whatever concerns you've got about Chris Paul running out of gas in the playoffs, or, you know, if a team, you know, the right matchup will kind of figure them out. I think they're a regular season wins machine. I think that they're going to get the most out of their talent just about every night. They didn't make any big signings, but they're bringing back Dario Saric, who obviously I know fan favorite of John Gonzalez, and in both his journalist and non-journalist forms. Who was actually a really helpful piece for them a couple of years ago as like a different look, small ball five, a guy who opened up the floor and did some different things for them, kind of like a change up when Ayton was off the floor. So now it's another depth piece, another guy that can sort of add some variety to their offense. I think, you know, the version of Devin Booker that you've seen is like, this is what he is now. He's an all NBA caliber two guard who's just going to continue to shoulder a big load in that offense and you know, get better year after year. I think they're going to be in the conversation for, you know, mid-50s win totals. Where they go in the postseason, everybody's going to kind of be saying, wake me up in May and we'll see where we are. But I think they're going to get there riding pretty high. I'm with you on the over.
All right, so the next two teams here that come in, they're tied at 52.5 wins, one in the Eastern Conference, one in the Western Conference. You've got the Milwaukee Bucks and the defending champion Golden State Warriors. Warriors came on hot late in the season and then really got moving, obviously, in the playoffs. Bucks almost got past the Celtics 7 games, but didn't. This one feels kind of low for both of them. For me, I'm going to go over on both.
I'm going to go over on the Bucks because the thing that I sort of didn't realize until I kind of took a quick look at it, which I guess I was not supposed to do, was that every member of their rotation, except for Bobby Portis, like everybody who matters in their rotation, missed at least 15 games last year. Brook Lopez only played 11 games during the regular season last year. So you get even like moderately better health for them. And I think they're blowing that away. I think that
Chris Middleton.
Yes, exactly. You get him back in the fold. You get, you know, more than like 64 games out of Drew Holiday. Giannis obviously is just like an engine, you know, rampaging over people. So I think that that's, and then one move that we'll see what it means. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe it means something. They added Joe Ingles, and Joe Ingles is coming off a torn ACL. Might not get him back until January or so, but that could be like a big trade deadline acquisition for them. Another guy who can play, another playmaker, sort of big wing that they can add. They were kind of running out of guys down the stretch last season. They were playing a pretty short rotation. He's somebody that knows how to play into the postseason. It seems like he could be a really nice fit next to Giannis. So I think that they're a pretty strong candidate for the over. I am a little concerned with Golden State, and not to be, you know, like, you know, counter or sort of like a, you know, contrarian argument guy, but they're going to suddenly be counting on for big minutes Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, and James Wiseman. Like they're not the top six. The top six from the championship team comes back, but now all those guys are going to have to play rotation minutes, and maybe they're all ready for it, but maybe they're not. And if they're not, now you're asking even more out of Steph, who's already doing so much, out of Draymond, who continues, you know, not getting any younger and continues to sort of have his offensive game degrade. Klay should be better offensively after a year back. We'll see where he is on defense. Jordan Poole, is he a one-year wonder, or is that going to be the way things are moving forward for him? Also, we don't know what his situation is going to be contractually. They might extend him. They might not. He might be going into restricted free agency, which, as we saw with Ayton, can be a bit of a thing that hangs over you. So I don't know. There's some question marks here about how it all sort of shakes out. I like Dante DiVincenzo. I like Jamichael Green. I think the moves they made there are fine. But a lot of it comes down to whether those young guys are ready. And I think I'm going to need to see it before I pencil them in for 53 wins. So I'm going to go slight under on the Warriors. And now here, you know, we're going to have all the Warriors Twitter folks that are going to come at my neck on it. I understand and I appreciate it. I'm just saying I'll believe it when I see it.
Don't engage with them when they come for you. But I will say muscle memory for the Warriors. Like, I always feel like the Warriors are done. Howard Beck and I have talked about this a million times. You're like, oh, this is where the Warriors fall off. And they're like, no, we're going to win another championship. Right. Another team that's been kind of in vogue, like on the upswing in the offseason, the Los Angeles Clippers come in next at 51.5 games. Obviously, healthy Kawhi Leonard, ostensibly, get PG back. Now, all of a sudden, you pair those two guys together, and it's like, sure, I could see the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, and 51.5 is not a massive number given all the tools at their disposal. I think one, you know, if I was looking for a hole to poke, it would just be like, do they have too many guys? Like at this point, you know, Ty Lue's going to have to, and there are a few coaches that are better at, you know, going through the ingredients and figuring out how to make a meal. But like, sometimes it's like, he's better if you take a big thing away from him and then he's got to sort of shuffle the deck. But now it's like, if you have everything, what does the lineups look like? Who's able to, you know, what sort of combinations do you find? But I think it's just an embarrassment of riches. I'm really hoping that Kawhi Leonard is back and at Kawhi Leonard level, because where he was at, you know, it's been like, what, 13, 14 months now, so it's easy to forget. Before he went down in the playoffs, he was at like a crazy level. And so, you know, where they were just taking apart the Jazz. So I'm excited for this team. I think it's an over, but I think my concern would just be like, it's going to take them a little while to figure it out and for Lou to hammer out his rotations. But I think once they do that, they're going to actually storm the league.
Yeah, I'm going to go slight over on that one too. And I now realize as I'm looking at this list that I've gone over on everybody except for the Celtics. So it's going great. Everybody's going over apparently.
It's the summer. Optimism abounds. Yeah. I'm sure we'll find some teams to be pessimistic about soon.
Perfectly rosy. All right, next group at 50.5 games. We've got three teams here according to Vegas. Over under 50.5 games for the 76ers, the Grizzlies, and the Heat. I'll go first on the Sixers. This is going to surprise you, Dan. This is going to be an over for me. And you know what? Like, part of that is the baked in, and like, I've taken some heat from the Open Floor Globe about me always talking about the Sixers, but I really do like how they had a very quiet, professional, you know, improve the team singles and doubles kind of offseason. I like adding in PJ Tucker. Yes, he's 37 years old, but I love DeAnthony Melton. And then you add Daniel House. And all of a sudden, that rotation last year that got real thin real fast is a lot deeper. And, like, you know, I don't know where, you know, Niang and Thibel fall in the rotation now. And I like not knowing because it's going to be on the back end.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that this is an over for me. I think that the Sixers have a chance to, if, you know, one thing goes wrong for, you know, the top two teams in the East, I think they have a chance to absolutely go back up to a number one seed here. I love the way that this roster is put together. I think you go and it's not just that you bring Harden back at a non-full max. Obviously, there's the somewhat controversial nature of his extension, but starting at a lower number to be able to bring in PJ Tucker, to be able to bring in Daniel House, the draft night trade to bring in Melton. All of a sudden you've got three guys who are like perfect fits to play next to him. They can be low usage, stroke threes, defend multiple positions, and create a little bit of havoc. And now you're not relying on Matisse Thybul to be that. Mm-hmm. Like a one-way player. I mean, he's an incredible havoc wreaker, but he's a one-way player that you can't rely on, you know, to make those shots or to be able to put the ball on the deck and be the closeout and get to the rim. So now you have multiple guys that can fill those roles, that can play off of Harden, that I think are going to be even better playing off of Embiid. And now Embiid, one of the things we talked about last year a lot, his advancements as a passer. Now there's targets everywhere. There's shooting all over the place around him to be able to, you know, to draw that double, kick it out. And I think that offense has a chance to be elite. I think the fact that you have multiple guys on the wings who can defend with some athleticism and, you know, be able to, you know, get to loose balls, be able to, you know, sort of deflections and create sort of just muck up an opposing defense, so that it's not, or an opposing offense rather, so that it's not just let him go to Joel and let him clean it up. there's a chance for this to be like a top five team on both ends of the floor. I think it's a strong over for me. And that's, you know, you said a quiet and functional improve the team offseason. You know, that's I'm instantly waiting for the other shoe to drop. Yeah. Because as our friend Mike Levin says, imagine enjoying a sports team in Philadelphia. But so far, there's a lot to enjoy.
So far. And I don't know if you've seen him. Euro James Harden looking spelt instead of thick with two C's. I'm loving that. These next two teams, I'm going to go slight under on the Grizzlies just because of the conference. Like, I love that team. Ja is ascendant. He's an absolute revelation. I just like, you know, the conference is stacked and, you know, maybe slight under, but right around 50 feels right. And the same with the Heat. Jimmy Butler had to do so much last year. You unplug PJ Tucker, as you wrote about at theringer.com. Who's filling those minutes? Is it Strauss? You know, like, what are you doing there? But I like the Heat too. I just like them slightly less than that number.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Grizzlies. I'm not so. I'll go with you on the Heat just because, again, I know we're going to need some unders.
Yeah.
But I think with the Grizzlies, the concern I have, Jaren Jackson Jr., right at the start of free agency, we learn stress fracture in his foot. He's going to be out 4 to 6 months. If it's the early end of that recovery timetable, he's out for camp and maybe the beginning of the season. If it's the longer end, that's maybe up, you know, closer to Christmas. Yeah. And so they also lost Kyle Anderson, a kind of an important bench piece for them, goes to Minnesota. So then it's a lot on Brandon Clark. It's like, what else are you doing at the power forward position? And none of those other options at power forward can shoot like Jaren, which opens the floor up for Ja so much, opens the floor up for, you know, Dylan Brooks or Desmond Bain being able to drive and get to the rim. So I'm a little bit worried about what that front court rotation looks like while they're figuring it out with Jaren, with him out and then getting him back. That plus the strength of the West, like Denver coming back, the Clippers coming back. Yeah. I think that presents a situation for them. They could still be really good and win 48 games. And I think similarly in Miami, I don't necessarily think that the Tucker thing sinks them, but I think finding an answer at the four might take them a little while. Caleb Martin might wind up being the best answer there, a guy they re-signed for the taxpayer mid-level, about $6.5 million a year. They like him as a multi-positional defender. He doesn't have the experience of PJ Tucker, but he's about 10 years younger and has a lot of the same sort of traits. I think they're going to give him a shot, but I also think they're going to be shopping around for another answer at the four. And you're right. I mean, the counterbalance to that is maybe you get a full healthy season from Kyle Lowry, tougher to bank on as he gets older.
Yeah.
Maybe you get a growth season as an offensive player from Bam Adebayo, tough to bank on when you're asking him to do so much defensively. So if you get just a little bit of slippage from Jimmy, that can be a big problem on the offense. So yeah, same thing. I think they could be a 48-49 win team, the kind of team you don't want to see in the playoffs, but still wind up hitting that under.
This next one I struggled with. Denver Nuggets, reigning MVP Nikola Jokic, even though he stole it from the rightful heir Joel Embiid. 49.5 for the Nuggets. They're getting Jamal Murray back. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an over for me, and honestly a pretty clear one. I went back and I looked at it. So they're getting back not just Jamal Murray, but also Michael Porter Jr., who missed almost all last season with back injuries. And the expectation is they're going to have both those guys. The last two seasons that they had those guys, they won at, those were both shortened seasons because of the pandemic, but they won at 52 and 54 win paces on those two seasons. And so that even if just getting those guys back, plugging them in, and then you add in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Bruce Brown, who I think are two perfect fits as role players on that team next to Jokic, with another full season to Aaron Gordon. The last time we saw Murray, MPJ, and Jokic with Gordon there, they looked like a wrecking crew altogether. It was a small sample before the Murray injury, but I think that's a team that you talk about the depth, you talk about the high end for that offense. I think they're going to be in the mix for mid-50s. So to me, it's a pretty clear over.
Wow, you really sold me on that. Cleared it up. All right, I'll ride with you on the over. These next two teams are really interesting for me. Both set at 48.5, Dallas Mavericks and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Let's do the Mavericks first. I'm going to go slight under. I don't know about the Mavericks.
Yeah, I mean, to me, a lot of it is just, do you believe that's a top seven mm-hmm. defense again, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, maybe, you know, Jason Kidd, Sean Sweeney, that staff there did a great job. One of the sort of more unheralded players in the league, Dorian Finney-Smith, he's right on the edge of all defensive consideration there. But, you know, you bring in Christian Wood, you're asking a lot from all the complimentary pieces there. You know, when you got that sort of great half season from Spencer Dinwiddie, You know, is that going to carry over? He's going to have to take on a bigger role to replace Jalen Brunson, who is coming over here for the New York Knicks. Like, there's some questions up in the air about who else is sort of complements Luka, and then just is that defense built to stand up? Now, it wasn't like you know, they performed some kind of magic trick to get there. It was just guys executing rotations on a string. That's hard, really hard to keep up, I think. So I'm a little skeptical of that. Luka by himself maybe just blows this all up and wins the 52 games. It's possible, but you know, if you lose him for a little bit of time again, you know, who's picking up the slack there? I'm not so sure about it. So I'm with you. I still think they're probably a mid 40s team, but 48.5, I think I would probably bet the
under. Feels a little high. The Timberwolves at 48.5. The talk of the offseason with a trade that just blew everybody away. I didn't like the Rudy Gobert trade. I thought they gave up way too much. Beyond that, I don't understand the fit at all. What are you doing with Kat now? Or are you all of a sudden just making him a jump shooter? He's going to sit outside on the perimeter and like bomb away threes because you can't have him and Gobert down there together clogging the paint. Like, it just feels awkward. I'm way under on the Timberwolves.
I'm going to zag on you here. I'm over. I think now part of it is because basically every year that Rudy Gobert was the starting center for the Jazz, they were right around 50. Like they, I mean, now, and obviously he had help there. Donovan Mitchell was there. I mean, Kat is an incredible offensive player. He's an incredible, not really high volume shooter. I mean, if they turn him into a 7-foot Klay Thompson, you know, I mean, it might not be the best complete use of his skill set, but I think it's going to work. The head coach there, Chris Finch, has had experience building offenses around two really skilled bigs. He was in New Orleans when they had Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, and that offense was a meat grinder. He was in Denver when they had Jokic and they briefly had Yusuf Nurkic. I believe he's going to figure out some ways to make that work. But really, for me, this is a bet on Anthony Edwards. I think that the reason I'm with you on, like, they gave up too much of their future in the deal to get Gobert. But I think they did it because they think Anthony Davis is the future. Anthony Edwards, rather, is the future. I think they think they've already got the guy. And if this is going into year three. Ja made that big leap last season, year two to year three. Ant was sensational in his first postseason. I think this is a bet that Anthony Edwards is going to be an all-star caliber guard in the West this year. And if he gets that, if he's at that level as a creator and a finisher and a scorer, Gobert mops up all their defensive problems they had last year, and Kat can just bomb away. I think that's a 50-win team, so I'm going over on that.
Right, that'll be interesting to see. I'm not sold on that fit at all. I like Anthony Edwards a lot. I just think that the rest of it is super clunky. All right, rattling through some more here. Atlanta Hawks, 46.5. Another fit that Roe and I talked about. As a standalone in a vacuum, DeJounte Murray, yes, and please. Next to Trae Young, question mark. I'm under on the Hawks.
Yeah, I'm under on the Hawks too, just because it still feels like there's other shoes to drop, and I'm not sure what they are. Like, they've been trying to trade John Collins since before they re-signed John Collins, and that's a big matzo ball kind of still hanging out there, and that was in rumors all summer, and then it was going to be, is he going to San Antonio? No, he's not. He's staying there. Okay, well, how excited is everybody going to be? Now there's another higher usage player in that starting lineup to maybe take touches and shots away from John Collins. So where is that going? There's still, it feels like a lot that relies on the health of the legs of DeAndre Hunter and Bogdan Bogdanovic, neither of which have been really like bankable commodities for the last couple of seasons. So I'm a little bit concerned there. I love what the center combination of Capella and Okongwu can be. It feels more shaky than I want it to, given all they've put into building that starting five. So they were the classic team that was like a year ahead of schedule. Everyone got excited about it, then they fell back to earth. And their front office knew, like, we had to change the calculus here. I don't know if this is the calculus to get them back up into that top five of the East. So it's an under for me until sort of proven otherwise.
John Collins has had his bags packed for like two straight years. He'd really like to settle in. He'd really like to settle in. All right, these next two teams, one we know what the team is, the other we do not. It's the Nets and the Raptors, both at 45.5. Raptors, they're just a professional, solid organization, right? I mean, they do more with less all the time. That is a credit to Masai Ujiri. I'm going to go over on the Raptors. The Nets is the one that needs the caveat, right? If it's the Nets as currently comprised and KD and Kyrie and Ben Simmons are going to play together, give me way over. And then if you unplug KD, I'll take the under. And I know that that's sort of a cop-out, but we don't know what the Nets are.
No, yeah, and that's not just our cop-out. Like, the odds makers are doing that too.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're asking, like, that is basically an average of everybody's guess. Like, 45.5 is, like, a little above average, and because if they play together, that's maybe a 53, 54 win team that could be up for number one in the East. And if they go the other way, they could absolutely go down to the bottom of the standing. So I'm going to take the under on the Nets just because I don't believe it's going to work out. I feel like I don't have any reason at this point, given the deterioration of that franchise since the start of last season, to believe that everyone's going to get on the same page and start singing Kumbaya and playing together. I don't see it. So I'm going the under on that. Even if it's not, you know, everybody gets traded away, I just think it's going to clunk its way past the finish line. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But and then it'll be fun to have cool playoff games to cover, you know, a few blocks away from the house. But like, I'm not buying that until proven otherwise. And then for the Raptors, yeah, I mean, 46 is not, it's weird because that offense can be so clunky.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about sort of clunky fits. And their half-court offense just doesn't really work a lot. I mean, Siakam does a ton for them. Fred VanVleet does a ton for them. You're betting on growth from Scottie Barnes, who was sensational last year. You know, Gary Trent Jr. is a really important sort of player for them. They do a really good job with development, but it still kind of comes hard for them. So you've got to be an elite defense and an elite transition team. They were that last year. They could be that again this year. I think I'm going to go slight under on them. I feel like if that's the kind of team where if one injury befalls them at a bad time, the apple cart can get upset. Like if Van Vliet's not there to play 37 minutes right. a game for 65 games, I think their offense takes a big hit. So I love watching them play because they're so weird looking and stylistically they're a different kind of team than just about anybody else in the league. But I think that it's more likely to me that they end up at like 44 than they wind up at 50.
Greater than the sum of
the under on them.
They've always been greater than the sum of their parts, you know, like obviously Kawhi accepted, but like that's just an organization where, you know, on any night when you have to play them, you're not looking at any individual player. You're just going, it's the Raptors. Probably going to be a tough night. All right. Next one's for you. Three teams at 44.5. You got the Bulls, the Lakers, and the Pelicans. Feels around right for the Bulls. Like that's, you know, that's a team built for the regular season. We saw what happened to them in the playoffs last year. I guess I'll go slide over. Like it just feels like about what they are, right? They're a middle of the pack Eastern Conference team that is not going to do much in the playoffs. They'll win their fair share of games, they'll beat you on a night, and then you won't be worried about them in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean they were 46-36 last year, and the glass half empty look on that is they got like the season of a lifetime from DeMar DeRozan, right? So how likely is it that they're going to get that again? And that you're adding that to, you know, hopefully you're hoping for better performances from the sort of supporting cast around him. Lonzo Ball, that continued the ongoing questions about what's up with his knee and like how healthy is he going to be and when's he going to be available to come back. That is a, you know, cause for concern. The glass half full side is they won 46 games last year, missing Lonzo for more than half a season, missing Alex Caruso for half a season, missing Pat Williams for, I think he only played like 17 games last year before he broke his arm. So, and they had a down season from Nick Vucevic. So it's like, if you get health and or growth anywhere in there, regression to the mean for Vuce, you know, a step forward season for Pat Williams, better health from Lonzo and Alex Caruso, who are so important as like ball pressure guys, the point of attack defenders who can create turnovers and make, you know, get them out in transition, get Zach LaVine off to the races. He dealt with knee issues last year. So are you getting a healthier Zach LaVine, who's also quite happy after getting paid? The hope is that all that stuff aggregates to them being better. I don't know if all that would counterbalance a slight step back for DeMar. So if DeMar comes back to earth a little bit and they don't get all those other things going right, that feels to me like an under.
All right, next one is the Lakers. This is easy for me. Is Russell Westbrook still in the Lakers? I'll take the under.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, or even the start of last season, if you would have told me I would be betting the under on a team that was starting LeBron James and Anthony Davis, yep, I would not have believed you. But
it just doesn't work right now. It does not work. And you know, and then on top of that, you've had the injury issues for Anthony Davis and LeBron. And like, okay, so even if everybody's healthy, how does that work? Is Russell Westbrook going to be a fly in the ointment again? You know, because I know that they want him to do certain things that now all of a sudden they're talking about having him set picks, right? And like, that's not something that he does, or stand in the corner and shoot threes, which, you know, he's a ball in his hand, high usage guy. And when he doesn't do that, he hasn't been very effective and he tends to pout. And like, I don't know, the Lakers just, I don't see how the Lakers have gotten better, and I don't understand how they think it's going to work.
Yeah, when we think about Russ, I keep thinking about your former colleague, Mike, still colleague, Kevin O'Connor, and I think about all the talk about what if he just cuts and moves off the ball, yeah. And then I keep thinking about the scorpion and the frog. It's like, the scorpion's going to sting the frog, buddy. It's the way this fable plays out. Yeah. They didn't change. It's not a choose-your-own-adventure ending. It ends the same way every time. Yeah. I don't see it. I think that if they're able to make a move, and I know there's been reporting about will Kyrie be, you know, would the Lakers be willing to come off of the first round picks to make a move for Kyrie? If they are able to do that and get off of Russ and bring in Kyrie, even though then you're in the position of having to bank everything on Kyrie showing up, which has obviously been a dicey gamble for the last couple of seasons, either staying healthy or just being available. But as presently constituted, yeah, you can like the Lonnie Walker Jr. of it all. You can be excited about, you know, bringing Stanley Johnson back or some of the other moves they've made on the margins. I don't see it. I would go the under there and then be pleasantly surprised if everything does congeal in a way where you get to see LeBron James playing meaningful games again. That's would be kind of neat to see.
That would be wonderful. Still wearing number six along with Bill Russell.
Right.
Last one on this group is the New Orleans Pelicans. Obviously this is pegged to Zion coming back. I want to know what Zion you're getting, right? I want to know, like, are you getting healthy Zion? What's his weight at? Is he in shape? At the end of the season last year, they weren't playing him, and yet we see him looking large and still throwing down, like, between-the-legs dunks and empty gyms. And, like, I don't know. I don't know what Zion you're getting. So it feels, this number feels optimistic, and I haven't been overly optimistic about the Pelicans for a while because Zion hasn't been around.
I'll provide the optimism on this one.
I'm going under.
I'm gonna go over on it because I think that even if all they did was bring back what they had for the last like 3 months of last season, not just the CJ McCollum trade, that was a big part of it, but when they reoriented their roster, they put Herb Jones in the starting lineup, and the defense just transformed. And suddenly you had Valanciunas as like a pretty good drop center, not a shot blocker, but a guy who can take up space, defensive rebound, finish possessions. And you had length all over the place. Then you plug in CJ, and instead of putting him at the two as an undersized shooting guard where he was for years in Portland, he's at the point, suddenly the positional size is better, and you're getting the benefit of the shooting all over the place. That lineup was good. They were a better than five. They were a bad team for like 20 games. Yep. And then they were an above 500 team the rest of the season, and better than that after the McCollum trade.
Pleasant surprise after McCollum, for sure.
Even if they were, and then who pushed Phoenix in the first round of the playoffs? Now, granted, Devin Booker got hurt during that series, but like I think they were better than people realized until it was like, oh wow, they're in this series against the 64 win Suns. So even if they just brought that team back, I'd be like, I can see them as like maybe a 43-44 win team. I am betting on a Zion season. I think he is like the all of the bad vibes of, I don't know if he wants to be here. And is he going to take the qualifying offer and just live off of his Jordan brand money to get to wherever? And then, you know, this part of his team is saying whatever, and this rep is saying that. I think he saw what it was with that Pelicans team and got into the vibe of it, signed that contract immediately, even with caveats in there about his weight and about the injury issues. And I think that he's going to come in the season. And if he's anything like, I mean, you're talking about upgrading from Jackson Hayes at power forward to Zion Williamson at power forward in that starting lineup. And if you do that, and if he's like the guy who I gave an all-NBA vote 2 years ago, I thought he was that good, even on a team that wasn't. I think that's a high 40s win team. And so I'm pretty comfortably over on this. And if I'm wrong betting on something that I'd like to see. So I don't mind that so much.
Over under 0.5 conversations between CJ McCollum and Zion Williamson in the offseason. I don't know. That's a dangerous number since those two had a problem connecting. But we'll talk about that another time. Cleveland Cavaliers. Dan, I watched a weird amount of Cleveland Cavaliers games last year. They're set at 42.5. I'm going to go over. It shouldn't work. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand how they're playing four bigs in their rotation with Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen and Kevin Love and Evan Mobley, who I think is going to be really good, already is really good. Darius Garland emerges. They maybe get Colin Sexton back. That's still a thing that they're trying to figure out right now. Ricky Rubio returning from an injury eventually. He looked really good with them before he got hurt. I'm over on the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's a weird, weird mix, but it worked for them last year.
100%. I'm with you. I mean, they were really good until the Jared Allen injury at the end of the season. That really sort of submarined them. They were like in the conversation. I remember your former colleague, Zach Cram, wrote a piece like early spring saying like, could they be the number one seed in the East? That's how good they were looking before Allen went down. Then that really tanked them and they put them into the play-in mix. Which, you know, was just too big of a hurdle for them to get over. But I love the mix of bigs. I loved what JB Bickerstaff does, sort of zagging on the conventional wisdom that it's a wings league. It's like, well, if we're huge everywhere, then it's not so much of a concern. And then Garland showing that he could shoulder that responsibility when Sexton and Rubio went out. I love. So the idea is now you bring him back with maybe Sexton and Rubio, and you still have Caris LeVert, who you brought in at the deadline. Now that ball handling responsibility, it's not all on Garland's shoulders. So I think there's a mix there that should be significantly better than 500. So I'm with you on the over. And again, like the feeling of being optimistic about Cleveland Cavaliers basketball that does not include LeBron James, it is a rarity, but it is something to savor. I think we should grab hold of it with both hands while we've got it.
Yeah, it's weird, but I like it. All right, now we get into the sub 40 win predictions. We're going to rattle through these. You got the Knicks and the Trailblazers at 39.5. Always under on the Knicks. Nobody ever lost money by underestimating the New York Knickerbockers. I love to underestimate them. It's forever and a day since they've surprised us. I'll go under on them. Trailblazers is weird for me though, Dan, because you get Dame Lillard back and, you know, you've got Jeremy Grant and like, you know, this could be an okay team. So I'll probably go slight over on the Trailblazers.
I'll join you in the slight over there. Cause I think that they're closer to like play in mm-hmm. and like, if Dame's healthy, I think that he has a tendency of bumping them up above their expectation. I am setting myself up for disaster by going always, over on the New always. York Knickerbockers. Here's one stat and then we'll go. With Kemba Walker off the floor last season, according to Cleaning the Glass, the New York Knicks were +3 points per 100 possessions. That's right around the full season net rating of the Timberwolves, who won 46 games. Kemba gone, Brunson in, you get that, plus a healthier season from Derrick Rose. I think they're 500, even if you don't factor in a Donovan Mitchell trade. So that's my bet on the over. I'm not actually betting you my money.
Yeah.
Maybe I can borrow money from somebody else to do it, but that's my gamble.
Charlotte Hornets, 37.5.
Under, because there's still the Miles Bridges investigation that's ongoing, and we don't know what's going to be happening with him if he's away from the team. And obviously not the most important thing in the world by a long shot, but he was their second best player and a giant piece of that roster. Without him, what they do at the four and the five, PJ Washington maybe steps in for some of it. I don't know, TBD on that. And I love LaMelo Ball, but I'm not so sure about how they soak up the rest of that Miles Bridges usage. So I'm going to go under that.
I also like LaMelo Ball, but I'm with you on the same concerns. I'll take the under as well. The Wizards, Brad Beal back with KP, 35.5.
Under, I don't believe it. Kristaps was a valuable member of the Knicks while he was upright and there. I don't see it. The Wizards are going to have to dramatically like exercise their demons for me to believe in them. Under.
This one's tougher for me because I do like Brad Beal and I like Kristaps Porzingis on paper. I just don't ever like him in reality. But the conference is so bad that I think those two might be able to clear that 35.5 hurdle. I'll go slight over. The recently deconstructed, but still with Donovan Mitchell, Jazz, and then also the Kings, who are the Kings, at 32.5.
Under on Utah, because I think there's Danny Ainge is going to reach a point where there's no reason to keep Donovan Mitchell anymore. And once they do that, there's nothing there to hang your hat on. So I think it's an under there. Over on the Sacramento
Kings. Get out of here.
It's August, John. Over on the Kings. Wow. They added shooting. They bring in Malik Monk. They bring in Kevin Huerter. I love Keegan Murray, the draft pick. The math on Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox. The offense looked really good. The defense, don't worry about that. Right, right. We'll worry about that in December. Mike Brown's here. Mike Brown's going to fix the defense. But that offense, there's a universe in which that offense is like a top seven offense. And if that happens and the defense is just not the literal worst defense in the league again, they're maybe flirting with 500. So I'm going over and, Sacramento, stand up.
Optimism abounds in the offseason. For the Jazz, I'm with you on the under because I do not think that Donovan Mitchell is long for this world. For the Kings, Dan, history. Under. I mean, look, it's the longest streak in NBA history without them making the playoffs. There was a tweet during, like, right around the playoffs, the offseason, saying that nobody in the NBA, currently in the NBA, has ever faced the Sacramento Kings in the playoffs, which is just mind-boggling. And guess what? That's not going to change this season either. Under on the
but
Kings.
But you can miss the playoffs again and still win 34 games.
Yeah, that's not going to happen either. Detroit Pistons at 27.5, young and rebuilding and potentially plucky. I'll go first. I don't have high hopes for the number. I do kind of like the mix that they're putting together. So under on the number, but optimism for the future.
Agreed. I think the best hope here is that Cade Cunningham basically drags them above that number himself, which is possible. He was awesome in the second half of last season, but that feels again like we'll revisit this in a year and see a dramatically bigger number, I think.
Magic and Thunder, two young, intriguing teams with high draft picks, 26.5 for both of them.
I think it's under on both of them, but again, along that same lines as Detroit, like, I love Paolo Banchero as like the idea of finally getting somebody who the primary thing is not just they have long arms and can play defense in Orlando, like somebody who can score. Imagine that. I love that idea, but one of those guys does not a functional offense make, and they need more of them. I don't think that the mix there, it still feels like they just have a lot of ingredients that they've got to kind of like figure out what the recipe is. And is, you know, Cole Anthony eventually going to be a part of that? Is Jonathan Isaac going to be part of anything at some point? You know, what's it going to be? There's still sort of a lot to figure out there. So I think there will be flashes of excitement, but it'll be under and much the same story in Oklahoma City. Like, I think that there's building, like, we'll see what Chet is. Chet is obviously
he's a riddle.
You know, but also like appointment watching because just like how, you know, the way his body moves in relation to what that size is. We've seen big lanky guys, but not ones that play exactly like him. Like Kristaps didn't play like that. So it's kind of interesting to watch. I think there's an outline of a team with him at one end and then like the bookend of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey. How you fill out the middle is going to be kind of the where the rubber meets the road there. And I think they're at least a year away from that. So curious.
Did Chet sell you on Summer League? I mean, that was interesting, right? Like, it was appointment viewing. And like, I am interested to see what he looks like with SGA.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is like what he sold more than anything is he sold me on Kenneth Lofton Jr. out of with the Grizzlies, like the under. So, you know, like, I need a new Z-Bo in my life, Gonz. We all need a new Z-Bo in our lives. I think that there's like the talent and the ball handling and the creation, all that kind of stuff plays, and that you sort of saw proof of concept of, yeah, he's going to get muscled under the rim sometimes, but he's also got the levers and the arms to be able to continue to make a difference even when he gets muscled up. So it's not going to translate against the Jokic's or Embiid's of the world, but there are only so many of those. And so can he hold up against questioning against a lot of other guys? I think he's going to be able to, and I think it'll be fun to watch. I just don't think it's going to translate into a lot of wins just yet.
For the Magic, I love Paolo Banchero. I think he wants to prove DeJounte Murray wrong. It's just bulletin board material all season long for him. But I'm under on both of these teams too, because the other thing is, do they even want to win this season, right? I mean,
that's the big question.
There's still a little bit of ways, so it probably behooves them to simultaneously do what they've been doing, which is player development and taking some L's in the service of improving those lottery odds.
And we know that if OKC is too good, they'll just sit SGA for the last 3 months.
Yeah, God, that's got to drive him insane. At some point, you got to let the kid drive the car, right? Like, at some point, he's got to be out there. I wonder if it's this season, but if I'm him, like, that's got to be a point of frustration, and they're meeting a point of critical mass. If it's not this season, it's going to be next for sure, where they're going to have to let him play. Last three teams for you, all at 24.5. You got the Pacers, the Rockets, and the Spurs.
I'm going to go. The only over for me here is the Rockets. I'm bullish on that collection of young talent. I think that Jabari Smith Jr. is going to fit really well there. I think Jalen Green, like the light kind of came on for him the last couple of months of last season. So I, like, there's something to build off of there. And I think, you know, even if it's just 27 wins, I think that that's a doable thing with that collection. Pacers, I think they feel like it's I talked myself into why the DeAndre Ayton move made a ton of sense. I wrote about it for TheRinger.com. It just didn't wind up, you know, panning out, maybe because they didn't really want it to. They didn't put on like the poison pills in the offer sheet and everything like that. I think they were looking to get a trade done more than they were looking to sign an RFA. But that just it's a team that's like it has one centerpiece. And it needs the other one. It's got Tyrese Halliburton, and it needs something else to make the battery go, and it's not there yet. So I think that they're probably completely comfortable being, again, finally they're rebuilding, so let's finally actually rebuild and see where we go. You know, maybe get another piece next season to go with Halliburton, Mathurin, and whatever that core is going to look like. And then the Spurs, they've signaled their intent, right? You know, you trade away an all-star, the only all-star you got. You extend Keldon Johnson because he's, I guess, going to be the number one usage guy on the team from this point on. And it seems like, you know, future draft picks, pick swaps, open for business. That's kind of where they're going. And, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, whether it's this summer or next, I think they're in the business of being as bad as they've been in a very long time.
Which is weird because, like, bad pop? Like, it's been a while. It's been a while since we've seen that.
It might be that the action is the juice, though, right? Like, I'm fine. I'm getting these young guys to coach, and I'm just going to be like a drill sergeant that brings them all up. And it's about the development. I give back at the end of the day, right? Maybe it's something like that. But I think it's going to be there'll be some fun players there and some interesting development for guys. But I think it's going to be a situation where they're in the market for a Victor Wembanyama or a Scoot Henderson or somebody like that. And maybe that's a turnaround that comes a lot quicker, but not this
shades
year.
Of them being bad and then landing Tim Duncan, maybe. I'll ride with you on all three of those, under on the Pacers, over on the Rockets, slight over on the Rockets. And then Spurs, I don't know. I mean, like, it's weird for me to think like Pop's going to be at the bottom of the league. But as you mentioned, right, they have signaled their intent. And we have now run through all 30 teams with over unders that, even though you and I differed on some, I think we both got them 100% correct. So,
okay. And I have to stress, if you disagree with any of my choices here, I'm on Twitter at Michael V. Pina. Yeah. You can get me there. You can, whatever your complaints are, you register right. them there. I will read them and respond in an orderly fashion.
Send them to the normal hosts of this program. Rohan is thrilled to interact with you on Twitter. Make sure you read him on theringer.com, and you can listen to me on Sports Illustrated Weekly, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be back with Rohan on Open Floor soon. In the meantime, Dan Devine, bless your heart. It was wonderful to see you. This was great fun.
Gons, always a pleasure, and thanks so much, Open Floor Globe, for having me.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.